This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
55 in Montgomery, Alabama. From the film King, a filmed record, Montgomery to Memphis, largely made from original newsreel footage, the film was played at a one-time-only event in 600 theaters on March 24, 1970, 2 years after Dr. King's assassination in Memphis, Tennessee. The film has rarely been seen since, but it has just been released on DVD by Kino Lorber. It was produced by Eli Landau and Richard Kaplan. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Felsaren, Mate Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gesder, Amy Littlefield, Martinez DeRosa, Nemo Allen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. If you want to go to our website, democracynow.org, click on our Black History Month special. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:03. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey.
February 13th, 2013. KBOO Station Navigator Report. We would like to thank everyone who donated to the Hats for the Homeless clothing drive. Your generosity to others less fortunate in our community is heartwarming. A special KBOO thanks to Zippity News for organizing this thoughtful event. Once in a Boo Moon is less than 2 weeks away, and tickets are going fast. Don't miss this amazing event featuring live music performed by KBOO hosts from the Folk Strip, music from the True Vine, Swing and Country, and the Noontime Jamboree. The evening includes desserts, a silent auction, and everyone who attends will be placed into a drawing to win two tickets to the entire popular Wintergrass Festival in Bellevue, Washington. For information...
Good morning.
Good morning.
You are listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey, and welcome to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in all points east, and 100.7 and points south.
And today is Monday, February 25th. It is about 8:05 a.m. in this part of the world.
Yeah. And we're hoping that you're still celebrating and enjoying the month of February. And although I think it occurs 365, many people are celebrating Black History Month. And Cecil and I had a couple of thoughts on that and a couple of things out of today's headlines. With regard to this being Black History Month, we're looking at it from kind of a larger perspective, which is how we as human beings are, I guess, in some ways wired to exclude. You know, we have our own categorization and sorting criteria as human beings. Human beings are sorting creatures. And so we assign ourselves certain statuses and certain places that we should be. And when folks don't fit into that, we find sorting criteria to keep them out of our group. Whether we actually accept that or whether that just turns into kind of like the meta process of the group. So the question today, to make this less arcane and less esoteric and more plain English, is how do you address your own tendencies to exclude people? How do you, go ahead.
No, and I'm a good person. Do I do that?
Yeah. Seriously, I don't exclude people. We all do. Mm-hmm. On one level, you'll hear jokes being made about, short people or blondes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an exclusion behavior. I don't like that person because they just are real broad with their gestures, you know, or the color of their skin is different. Or I'm not so sure I understand what's going on with their hair. You know, mm-hmm. We have our sorting criteria, but it's not just a sorting criteria so that we understand what our particular boundaries are. It's when we impose certain penalties on anyone who is deemed other. So you break it down, we're talking about discrimination. We're talking about discrimination not in the positive sense as in a sorting or choosing behavior, but in an exclusionary sense. So how do you deal with your own tendencies to be a bigot or to be discriminatory when it's not that nice sorting behavior, but that nasty exclusion behavior with penalties? One way that Cecil and I had talked about this is when your kids come home and they've learned this new word to describe somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's not particularly, it's not nice. It's not a kind word. It's not a positive word. It could be a socially or racially derogatory statement. How do you teach your kids not to use those words? What are the ways you teach them? What do you say to them? How do you deal with your own response to it? What if you believe that that's the way they should be described? You know, but you recognize that you're not going to get too far in society at large if you carry on with that behavior. How do you change? How do you make those changes? We want to address that today as we look at the issues and challenges brought up in the celebration of Black History Month.
And our number, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And also, you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. And so let's state the question one more time.
How do you personally deal with your own set of bigotry responses, your bigotry and discriminatory responses? How do you find a way to be, what's the word I want, self-conscious?
Self-conscious.
Yeah, and objective and look at them and accept it when people are telling you and then change that behavior?
I think that's a somewhat difficult question to resolve. First, because
it's ongoing.
It's ongoing, yes.
Yeah.
First, because it requires a certain recognition within myself,
mm-hmm.
that I'm a good person. That once in a while, maybe more while than once in a while, I notice maybe certain thoughts, certain physical responses that allow me to say, what is that all about, Cecil? Why did you mm-hmm. respond that way?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what skills I use. One thing that's helpful for me is checking in with somebody.
Right.
So if I have a response that I see someone and respond in a negative way, it might be helpful for me to check in with someone I trust. So that someone that I trust, someone who I'm comfortable sharing or being honest with. So that's one thing I do when I have those moments of less than honorable behavior or thoughts.
And then there's, like you said, what if we're not sure or we don't accept that that's a problem behavior? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I don't like people. Let me just pick someone out the blue. Maybe I have a problem with newcomers who are of Slavic descent, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm just thinking that that's okay. When somebody brings it to my attention, how do I accept that? How do I recognize? How do you out there accept and recognize? And most of the time, to be honest, it's going to come from somebody outside. Mm-hmm. It's not going to always come for us because we have, unfortunately, self-confirming, self-affirming beliefs, and it's hard for us to get out of those patterns sometimes. But as I listen to the program that was before us, it kind of reinforced my thought to do this because I was listening to Dr. King and, you know, and people were saying, how long? Not long. And I'm thinking and laughing at Cecil. It's like, well, not until we can address some of these internal responses we have that we try to keep secret and act like are acceptable. And part of that, I think, is like we said, listening to other people point out our behaviors and then being accepting enough to compare what they're saying to our response. Mm-hmm. You know, holding it up and saying, maybe there is something to the way I've been responding. And then seeking some other information. Maybe you don't have anybody you can bounce it off.
Right.
You know, well, what do you do then? Well, maybe you go read a book, read a newspaper.
So we're interested in hearing your responses. And one of the great things about radio is that you can be, you know, anonymous.
Yeah.
So you can feel free to share your honest thoughts and responses, because I think one of the ways in which prevents us from having these type of discussions is because we might be embarrassed. We might feel as if I'm not being the best I can be, and so I have to wear somewhat of a mask.
Mm-hmm.
But the anonymity of calling on a radio program is that you know who you are, and you can share your thoughts, and that's okay.
What we do ask, though, is that you not share something that you're not working on. In other words, if you've got what people have told you is an offensive or contrary perspective, and you're not seeking some enlightenment on it, you just want to share your being stuck in the muck, we're not trying to do that today. We want to keep it on a positive tip, and then more importantly, we're looking for that transformative energy. In the middle of conflict, in the middle of confusion, lies a solution. And it's only if we're willing to grapple with all of the muck in the mire and get in there and pull out the solution that we can do it. But it doesn't mean we wallow in it, you know. You're listening to More Talk Radio. Our phone number is 503-231-8187. This is your time to call. Now, we also have another topic, which might be a little bit easier for some folks, but it's no less... the selective service thing you mm-hmm. were talking about with DeFazio's proposal, I think it's controversial.
Well, as many of you do know, and certainly men from, say, 1973, when the draft ended, the selective service system continued. All men turning 18 have to register with selective service. If you do not, you are in trouble because may not be able to get a job and blah, blah, blah.
Can't get student loans. Financial aid,
all of that.
Government jobs.
Government jobs
mm-hmm.
and all of that. So all men, when they turn 18, have to sign up with selective service. Well, as you do know, that there is this heavy debate in Washington about our budget. And two lawmakers, one of them, Peter DeFazio here in Oregon, along with Mike Kaufman, a Republican in Colorado, have waged a campaign to abolish the selective service system. The selective service system has a budget of $24 million, a full-time staff of 130, and maintain a database of 17 million potential male draftees. Their proposal is that our all-volunteer military works very well, and that perhaps we should think of dropping the Selective Service Agency. DeFazio says that this might be difficult because people don't want to be viewed as being weak on national defense. It occurred to me while reading that, that perhaps we should broaden that discussion because perhaps we should eliminate Selective Service. But recently, the Defense Secretary in the Pentagon has lifted the ban on women combatants. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, well, if that's the case, why are not women, when they turn 18, required to register for selective service? So my question, should women be required to register for selective service?
You know, what exactly is the argument?
Mm-hmm.
The argument, should women be allowed to register or required to register, or should it be done away with? Or, you know, maybe is there even some hybrid response? You know, there might be people that figures, well, I don't know. Maybe everybody should serve for 2 years and that's it. Mm-hmm. And there are models for that in other countries. So 503-231-8187. You don't have to discuss both questions. You get to pick the one you want to talk about.
And let's go to our first caller.
Thank you for being patient. Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks.
So what's on your mind?
I was calling about the first topic.
Okay.
As far as, you know, working towards your own personal reactions towards different people. And I found that a lot of times we're separated, and so we don't know a lot of different types of people. And that can feed our fear of the unknown sometimes. And so then it can be sometimes a natural reaction to not know how to handle certain situations around certain people.
Mm.
But what I found is helpful to me is, like, I'll ask myself, if I find myself thinking something negative, then I ask myself, well, what's an instance when somebody has not done something that falls into the category of my negative thought? And that can help contradict that initial response from myself.
So if I'm hearing you right, Gloria, what you're saying is the moment somebody does something that makes you have that negative response, what you do is trying to counteract it by thinking of your experience a person from this group has done something positive or something that you valued or appreciated.
Yes, and sometimes even something that if I think, oh, a person's lazy, I'll think, well, wait, but I've known this person and they're not lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And another thing is, if I cannot think of a personal experience that way, then I have to ask myself, well, maybe I'm not around different types of people enough, and I need to put myself literally with other people, put myself in situations where I will be able to come in contact with all kinds of different people and put myself out there so I can learn about them and maybe just get to know different types of people so that I don't have that reaction.
Yeah.
That's just my piece.
Oh, but thank you for sharing, and thank you for being brave.
well,
you know, because I can appreciate that. It could be a little challenging, especially on a Monday morning.
Yeah. Yes. So that's just all I wanted to share, and thank you guys for bringing up this topic. I think it's very important because a lot of times this type of thing goes on, and it's very, very subtle.
Yes.
Yes.
A lot of people don't want to talk about it, but it's there, definitely.
All right. So, Well, thank you for calling and for sharing and for your positive attitude. We appreciate it.
No problem. Have a good day.
You too.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Harvey.
Hi, Celeste and Cecil. How are you today?
Just fine. How about yourself?
Very good. Well, I'm calling for a shift in consciousness here because, to me, variety is the spice of life.
All right.
Variety in all things. That's what nature provides so that we won't get bored. There's even a magazine, a trade magazine called Variety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about variety, and I see it as a gift, not a curse.
Mm. Yes.
And I think that especially people who believe in God and Creator, I believe that it's better for them to praise the gift of variety, and that's in people and in nature. We need a shift of consciousness to appreciate the gift of variety.
I like that.
That's how I live my life, and I appreciate everyone.
I like what you said in terms of the gift of variety in persons and in the created order.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, life would get boring in a minute. If we had to eat the same meal, listen to the same song over and over, read the same book over and over, see the same movie over, how long would it be till we all went crazy? It's variety that keeps us sane and it makes life interesting. I praise the Creator, and I praise the gift of variety.
All righty. Thank you.
That's great.
I like that, the gift of variety.
Thanks, Harvey.
My pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I learned from what he said, and mm-hmm. but sometimes that can be risky for me, you know, in terms of variety, because I like, this is just an example, but I'm used to eating oatmeal every morning. and when I don't have my oatmeal, it's like, ah. But also, you know, just talking in larger context, mm-hmm. Something that we're familiar with, we're comfortable with. And as Harvey mentioned, and even before that, Gloria, mm-hmm. in terms of stepping out of yourself.
Out of
the comfort zone. That's challenging for some people. So perhaps when you call us here, 503-231-8187, you might give an example of how you are able to step out of your comfort zone to experience the variety, as Harvey mentioned, or to have another experience with someone or a culture that is different, as Glory suggested.
Yes. 503-231-8187, and we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Joanne.
Yes, hello. In regards to Panetta and giving woman equality in killing people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't want that. I want peace in the world somehow.
Yeah.
And also, what I want for woman is, if they want it, what I want for woman in the world, if they want, is to have abortion rights.
Oh, did you leave? Oh,
yes, she did.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, she brought up something that you and I even talked about a couple of weeks ago. It's like, oh, okay, I'm not so sure I want the right to go out and necessarily kill anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I have some challenges with that. And having been in the military and know that, you know, yes, I do want a strong national defense, but that's different from going out and, like, policing the world and calling that national security. It's not the same thing. You know, there is a thin line there. How do you serve in a military experience and be cognizant that ultimately what you're doing can support the killing of another person? You know, that's a multifaceted problem. That is not just a single black and white problem. And so for some women, they're happy. They're thinking, yay, more opportunities to expand and advance my personal gifts and my talents. Other might think, like Joanne said, yeah, right, I want to go out and kill somebody.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And if you would like to comment on whether equality means the equality to be integrated into a violent, corrupt system, such as the military, a little personal commentary there, or not, give us a call. And our first question was in terms of how do we move beyond? How do we?
Yes. How do we transform our attitudes, our personal attitudes of bigotry and discrimination?
Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm afraid I brought along my soapbox, so I have a lot to say.
Okay.
Okay.
First of all, regarding abolishing the Selective Service, the fact is that as incomes have continued to reduce, more and more people have had no choice but to go to the military because that's all they can afford.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it makes more sense to bring back the Selective Service so that the rich 1% has some skin in the game, because mm-hmm. this way, as it stands, they can have wars unended, and in no way are they personally harmed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's my first point. Second point, reference women in the military. Of course, we'd like none of us to have to kill, but we also know and that they're already there. And this at least recognizes what's already happening. It's not really a change, except that finally it's recognized and that they can get the accommodation for what they are already doing.
Just to be clear on what you're saying, when they're already there.
They're already on the front lines,
because right.
there is no front lines. They're already in the cities that are being actively invaded one way or the other, and they're already having to pull the trigger to defend themselves. That's a fact.
Well, that is true. I have a former coworker and an acquaintance who was a veteran of Desert Storm, and often we sat and talked about some of the post-traumatic responses that she was still having to the sound of airplanes going over, or just, you know, big fires, because she had been in military fire, because she worked in the medical corps. So, you know,
yes.
you're going to see
oh, yes.
people injured. And so I appreciate what you're saying, is that sometimes it is multifaceted. It's not just a single, two-headed dichotomy. Sometimes it's multifaceted, and that gives women now the rights to claim combat pay or additional medical help.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And Terry, you said you were on the soapbox. Do you have anything else to share with us?
Oh, of course I do.
Okay.
Reference the comment of having everybody do 2 years. I served in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
That is what happens.
Mm.
And the reality is it makes sense, but not military only. If people get to choose how they're going to serve, perhaps we could cut down the number of people in the military and just by attrition stop having wars.
Well, you know, your comment there, you know, other people have also raised the suggestion that there should be a national service requirement for people and open it up, as you suggest, you know, beyond military. So, you know, the example of AmeriCorps or Peace Corps
mm-hmm.
or some, you know, teaching in a rural district.
Working with
or even
elders.
Habitat for Humanity.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Elder mm-hmm. Corps. Yes. All of that. And stop putting it all our eggs in one basket that we don't all support.
I agree. 100%.
Okay, that's I'll get off my box.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. We want to encourage you to call 503-231-8187 and share the conversational points on our topics. Join the conversation now. It's early. You know, you get your call in. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. I hope you are too, both
Good.
Of you. I'd like to address each of these two subjects today. And the first one, I think, and I want to make this clear that I'm not raining on the parade of the last caller. However, in the matter of women serving, period. But my take on it is the more of the population made to serve, the greater the opportunity of our government to wage war at nearly any instant. So
mm-hmm.
I would say hold back on that. And my other take is on the question of why we have exclusionary tendencies. I would say it's labeling. that we insist on breaking people into degrees when we label, and I would say that's the basis of prejudice. And I have two examples that I'd like to put forward.
Excellent.
And one seems so small, but I think it isn't. And that is, for an example, if a person does something like a crossword puzzle, nearly every time there are at least two derogatory and labeling titles, names, within that puzzle. And I thought, why did they put that in there? It just emphasizes and once again excludes. Wow. And the other is perhaps more important. A personal example is that recently I was asked to join a specific group for a wonderful new activity I would like to do. And when it was explained to me by this individual, very nice gal, not anything against her. Mm-hmm. However, she indicated that there were three levels of entry into this particular program, and each one had a name that indicated the strengths, and the last one, which is the one I would be beginning because I'd be new at this activity, was such a demeaning name, it's put me off. Mm. I'm not going to join. And I wanted to so much, and I thought, there you go again. And women also do a lot of self-labeling,
yes,
which I think has kept us back. We don't respect ourselves the way we should, entirely as much as any other living individual. We're born here. We have rights, and we must protect them, and I wish people would stop labeling.
Cheryl, that last, the story you shared about joining this group, this organization, and when you heard this offensive term for the level you would enter into, did you say anything to that person you were speaking with?
No, I didn't, and that is such an excellent comment, because the reason I didn't do it is, as we all do, who wants to lose face and admit that you are at this level when I have some skill at this already, I should mention. It's just that it's something I need to improve on.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that Cecil, that's just a wonderful observation. I wanted to.
Yeah.
I did not.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes when you're faced with having to go into the dynamic, you know, like David and Goliath, and you feel like you might be a little bit outnumbered or outmaneuvered, it will kind of seal those lips. It'll make you shut up for a moment. But my encouragement would be is if you don't want to join, but you want to have those satisfactory moments when you're laying on your pillow at night, address it as softly as you can, but as pointedly as you can. Let people know. You never know. Maybe you plant a seed that causes a change, a shift in consciousness for somebody. For all this other woman, you know, was about, maybe no one had ever really just brought it to her and said, that's unacceptable, because everybody really wanted to join more than they wanted to let someone know they were offended by that title.
Yes, and that's also excellent, and I did consider some of what you said, but I also thought at that moment, if a person says something that way, you are instantly labeled as someone who is questioning what that initial label is all about, and then you feel like, well, and of course the other tack to take is to just smile and just go with it, and isn't that the boundary we all face between, is this something worth standing up for, or am I being offended and I shouldn't be?
Yeah.
You know, it's all of those questions. So, yes, I like that idea very much. That's a great idea. So, thank you. Those are my comments for this morning.
All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
You know, one of the things that I think about when I'm faced with a situation like that is I do think, is this something worth standing up for? But I, the way I balance it is, I have two scenarios. One is, I think of it, is this one more grain of poison I'm swallowing and trying to ingest, you know, and I'm going to have to deal with the upset that's going to it's caused me, or is the water being turned up one more degree, you know, and I'm about to boil? And being a person of color and, you know, being a woman, finding that life and society have made lots of labels for me, you know, I find that there are times when I can either get fatigued because I'm trying to address it, you know, and worn down, or, you know, or you just, your back's up against the wall.
Sure.
So, you know, one of the things I think that kind of helps us when we're faced with the multiplicity of levels and labels is to pick one or two a day, you know, and just address those, because there's always going to be another label, you know, there's always going to be another label. Pick one or two, deal with that. Be satisfied with it. Take that as your teachable, your personal teachable, learnable moment, and just roll.
Just go ahead.
Yeah.
Hey, that's great. You're listening to More Talk Radio here at KBOO. My name is Cecil Prescott.
And my name is Celeste Carey.
And our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And we're speaking this morning, we want you to speak about a couple of things.
Personal transformative power. You know, when you're dealing with your own personal bigotries and discriminatory behaviors, and how do you change it? How do you even open up to see that you have it? If somebody tells you, hey, that was sounding a little bit, you know, bigoted or discriminatory, do you accept the possibility at least and then do some self-examination? And then how do you make that transition?
Let's go to our next caller. Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. I live in Tillamook County at the coast, and it's got two characteristics. It's got the highest battered women population in the state of Oregon, and it's kind of backward socially. I love where we live, the part we live in by the river, but it's also got some of the most blatant racism still going around, you know, denying Oregon being a progressive state. Anyway, there's this one guy, and he goes to my watering hole, and he's one of these guys, I'm sure you've run into them, that he likes to say things that he knows will irritate people.
Yes.
You know, there's, I'm no shrinking. You know, I'm pretty combative, but I've learned in the last few years to listen a bit and pick my point at jumping in. You know, when it gets to the point. So, he said, well, you know, there's some golf on TV, and he came out and said, you know, Tiger Woods was playing. He said, you know, blacks shouldn't be allowed to play golf. It's a gentleman's game. And he didn't use the word blacks either. So he went the full. So I said, Jimmy, that can't be right, because George W. Bush and Rush Limbaugh play golf too. How do you figure that out? I kind of shut him up. But it's interesting that these two facts should go together, the highest battered women rate and I think in the highest, you know, to me, the, you know, I've been to the depths of Eastern Oregon and the boonies, and it's never been as bad as this. And
well, what's the economy like in terms of the jobs? What's the unemployment level there?
Oh, it's terrible.
Okay.
That's another thing. And the education, it's not priority culturally. I mean, I'm an artist, and I tend to show anywhere but down here. So, you know, there's a definite cultural link there. And to one of the other questions, I've found myself, you know, when I think I'm as pure as the driven snow, I'm as pure as the driven slush, actually. Because I tend to be a little... I've never understood racism. I've lived all over the world, but I tend to be suspicious of blonde, Teutonic-looking men now. So I, you know, I'm not pure by any means, because they tend, in my experience, to be bullies. But that's maybe just because I was born at the end of World War II, and there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Oh, God, master going on. Anyway, I just wanted to say that there's a definite link between culture, education, abuse, and racism, and... I'm trying to find a way to write about it and link it, you know. So I just wanted to chuck that into the mix. And as for military, I can't imagine why any woman would want to be in the military, because look at all the, you know, the rape and stuff that goes on, apart from the damage to them personally. But that's, I'm not a woman, so I don't know. I can't imagine why anybody wants to be in the military. And to call it a Department of Defense in this country is a joke. But it's got more destructive power in the next 26 countries combined.
Yeah,
so it's not a Department of Defense, it's a part of Department of Let's Keep the Wars Ticking Over.
Exactly. I heard a commentary on radio the other day that made the same point. Mentioned, I think it's Great Britain, at least they call it the Department of War. But
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Hey,
well, thank you.
You,
Brian.
Okay, that's my 10 cents worth. Thank you.
Hey, that's great. And that the challenge of always, you know, when to speak up, how to confront, and it seems as if with the gentleman he had the engagement with, he sort of used humor to raise the awareness. We have a couple of callers on hold. We'll get to you in a second. I just want to remind you that you are listening to KBOO, and at 9 on the OMO Variety Hour, Bill Resnick discusses how gun proponents whip up fears of crime, and Alan Weider interviews radical singer-songwriter David Rovix. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, host Barbara Bernstein speaks with author and activist Sandra Steingraber about why fracking is not a sustainable solution to our energy needs. At 11 on the Health and Healthcare Forum, host Roberta Hall speaks with Linda Drack about developing healthy food environments for incarcerated women at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility here in Oregon. And at 11:30, Ralph Colson interviewed John Hodgman, The Daily Show's resident expert, about his upcoming event here at the Baghdad Theater in Portland and the challenges of combining writing, acting, and comedy and more. And thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. And if you are not yet a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Absolutely. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning. You know, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Now we can.
You know, what you're talking about, those idiosyncrasies that people have, I think it's more pronounced here in America because we live in a society that's based on class. And, you know, and because of this class system, you're going to have people thinking they're better than people. You're going to have those prejudices. You can't even go get a job. And on the application, they're going to ask you what sex, what race. I mean, it's ironic that we still have to deal with that kind of situation. You're not gonna get rid of that in this society because the divide and conquer concept is gonna always be in play because people at the top want the people at the bottom fighting each other. And as long as you live in a capitalistic society, you're gonna have that because capitalism cannot exist without racism and all those other little negativisms that you talk about. Capitalism has to have that. If we were in a different society where there was tribalism, you may not have a lot of that, but you're going to have that here, and it's going to be hard to get rid of it. I mean, it's a sad commentary in this society, and I keep going back to this point, where dogs have gained more social acceptance than a lot of people. There's never any political argument about medical care for animals, yet animals get it all the time, and it's freely given to them. So until this society, man, puts people first, you're going to have all those problems. And that's basically all I got to say. I'll talk to you later.
Hey, thank you, Michael. And I think one of the ways in which we do that is with people such as yourself speaking out. So certainly we live in a, as you suggested, a class society. But I think by people speaking out and being aware of that, that maybe that's how one way the transformation begins.
You know, I did want to challenge something, though. I don't think it's just a capitalistic society that will experience bigotry and discrimination. And I don't think that it is just a class-based society, because when I look at other countries and you look at socialism and you look at what has been communism, you know, and some of the other shades in between, you still have people doing the sorting behavior and then applying penalties to the people who don't fall in what they perceive as the good class or the good sort, you know, or the good group. And so it's more human nature, and it's not wed to an economic system.
It may manifest itself in particular ways in different cultures and society, but it's a universal.
It's a universal. You know, and it for example, historically, there was a point in which Japan bullied China. You know, now these are both groups from the larger subset of Asian population. Okay, they had some areas in common, is what I'm trying to say.
Sure.
And you know, and so when you see this kind of bullying behavior that is manifested as a negative penalty, you know, for the sorting. You can't base it just purely on class or economy. It comes out of different philosophies and different aspects.
I wonder, you know, when E.T. comes to the our planet, he says the same. She says
short.
The same thing about humanity in general.
E.T. short, so you know we're going to talk bad about E.T.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Hey, Jesse. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a response I like to use when I want to speak up, but I'm not quite ready to do verbal battle.
Okay.
I just, as politely and sweetly as I can, I say, well, that's just one way to think about it.
Okay.
So that usually just, it's like a dead end. It's like I've said that in some way I just don't disagree, but there's usually not a good comeback that person has to say.
Well, that's I appreciate that because you make your point in a way that's direct, but in a way that I think people can hear it.
Yeah, without having to pull out, you know, weapons or even rattle your saber, you know, it's just like, okay, dead end here. Please don't come down here anymore.
All right. Thanks for the show.
Before you go, what kind of responses do you say usually just shuts people down? Do you have what turns into a teachable moment where, you know, somebody wants to hear more about what you have to say and tries to engage you?
Well, sometimes I usually pull that out when I don't want to ruin someone's dinner party by taking on an adversary.
Okay.
Or I'm in a social situation where I just don't feel like I can let it go by. I feel like I always have that tool in my tool belt where I can say something, and, you know, if they're interested in my opinion and not just want to fight.
All right, great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jesse.
Thank you. Bye.
I had an interesting conversation this Friday past. I had the honor of being asked to do a presentation at the Portland VA Medical Center. And I had a number of people come up and speak to me after the presentation. And basically what I tried to do was show Black history through music and show some of the analogs and some of the similarities and draw it as kind of a metaphor. But, you know, it was really interesting how many people came up and talked about the importance of us remaining aware that we're all human beings, whether it was people who had family members that were serving in the military and being upset because as a middle-aged white man, he came up and told me, you know, my kids, this is the only option they have, and I don't like that this is their option, you know, and also, I like it when people get along well, he says. I came from a place where my family members might have two stacks of records. One of them were the colored music that they liked, and then the others were the white artists who sometimes sang the same songs by the colored artists that they liked. But more importantly, what they realize is that there's some unfair sorting going on here. There's some unfair penalties being applied because folks don't meet up. And there are not enough options all across the board. And when you think about how Dr. King and the latter part of his service on this planet really looked to pull people together, and that was manifested in the Poor People's March, which worked for people of all colors to better their economic and educational and social opportunities. And Dr. King looked at the rainbow of people and said, we need to come together and we need to make this happen for everyone, because everyone has a dream and this dream is important to the survival of human beings. When you look at it from that perspective, you can't help but get really excited when a middle-aged white man in Oregon comes up to a black woman and says, thank you for this, you know, and I see you as a sister human being. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really one of those powerful moments when it all comes together and you figure maybe this is the answer that King said when he said, how long?
How long?
You know, maybe that right then was the right now moment, you know. We have more time. We have some other callers holding. Be one of those callers, 503-231-8187. And thank you, Natalie, for being patient.
I know. Thank you very much. I like this subject very much. And there's one thing that I wanted to mention is that I think it's natural for us to segregate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we should be, and I'm going to explain that, I don't think we should come down on ourselves for it. And it's just a preservation, you know, mechanism. Mm-hmm. We're pack animals, so we defend our pack against, the difference and the adversary. And I think it's just evolutionary that we have that reaction. And so I don't, you know, the important thing is to be aware of it and to just be always very aware of yourself and how you react to people. But when you find yourself like in an environment with a whole bunch of people from the Middle East, for example, that act different, it's natural to feel, you know, us versus the other, just because of that ignorance and of the other person. And I think that what the problem is that a lot of people exploit those natural reactions, and that's how you get racism and all of these hateful isms. And the way that I've come to be aware of that and work through it is, for one thing, is to expose yourself to the other. Because when you really expose and give it time to expose, not just like looking at someone on the street, but really participating in their family and their circle, you pretty soon realize all of the commonalities that you have as people, as human beings with the same reactions. And then those differences become much smaller and you're able to understand. And the other thing is, I always think about my frailty and my, you know, how my weaknesses. And so when I see someone that I don't like the way they're acting and I start being judgmental, I just take a step back and, you know, what is this trying to teach me?
Mm-hmm.
Reaction. Mm-hmm. And one concept that really helped me a lot through all of this was the concept of white privilege. When I was working a lot in the community at one point, and I was kind of shocked by that concept because I didn't see myself as privileged, but it actually really opened my eyes to a lot of things. And I think also that a lot of people have educational advantages that other people don't have, and we need to be aware of that, and that, you know, it's not all inherent to the other person, but that there are societal forces that keep us separate and make us different, too.
Well, thank you, and thank you for mentioning how you build bridges both within yourself and then also looking to be aware of some of the larger challenges.
My pleasure.
Thank you for your call.
Hey, thank you so much, Natalie. I appreciated the words you share and the wisdom that you imparted with us.
Really, really quickly, because we do have one more call I'm going to try and squeeze in. When we find that we are responding, as our last caller mentioned, about being pack animals and looking at other, remember, as she also said, we are all human beings. And so that's our larger pack. And maybe the best evolutionary response is to remember that it is the strength of many that helps us overcome as a group, you know, rather than to single ourselves out into individual cells. Let's go to our last caller, see if we can. Good morning, David.
This is a recording.
Oh, okay. No.
David, are you there?
I'm here. Can you
okay.
hear me?
Okay. Yes, we got you. All righty.
Great. I just wanted to say, as far as talking about how we accept correction about if we're expressing a tendency that, you know, could potentially be exclusionary in some way. I'm a straight white guy, so I'm definitely of the privileged caste. And a really important thing for me to realize, and it took some time to do this, is that if someone suggests to me that something I've said is racist or sexist or homophobic or whatever, to simply accept that and not not try to defend myself or like argue my way out of it and say, well, no, I don't think that's racist, and here's why. That, you know, I realized at some point that that's not important. It doesn't matter if I don't think it's racist or I wasn't intending to be racist or whatever. Just to realize and accept that if it was perceived that way, then effectively it is. And it doesn't mean I am racist. It doesn't mean I'm a bad person. It just means that whatever I just said or did, you know, is a sort of harmful activity. And just to accept that, listen to the feedback and move on. And I think that our, you know, as humans, we our consciousness has a pretty amazing ability to adapt and learn and improve. And if we just hear the feedback, just truly hear it and accept it, then our I think our behavior really tends to self-correct pretty miraculously. You know, without without necessarily having to kind of grind ourselves or, you know, judge ourselves.
Yes.
Yes.
Hey, those are some powerful words and I think a very good conclusion for our program this morning. So thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, so his name was David?
Yes.
Okay, well, hey, thanks David and Natalie and Jesse and Michael and Brian and Cheryl and Terry and Joanne and Harvey and Gloria for making this a really great program.
Great program. And for giving all of us some food for thought and some actual tools for transformation. You know, I wanna end with what, you know, we started with, was to have that shift of consciousness to appreciate the gift of variety. Lovely. Well, here's a gift of variety, and we hope that you are exercising the necessary shift in consciousness to support it. What am I talking about? I'm talking about KBOO Portland. Become a member. We need your support to stay on the air and to stay strong. So when you support us financially and when you come down and throw a shoulder to the wheel through some different aspect of training or service as well, we are strong, we are here, and we remain in the future. Just like you. Your community connection, KBOO Portland. And Cecil and I will hear you next week.
KBOO Radio is a proud sponsor of the 23rd Cascade Festival of African Films, Africa through African Lenses. The film festival will take place February 1st through March 2nd, 2013, Thursday through Saturdays each week. The majority of films were made by African directors and celebrate Africa's achievements, expose Africa's failures, and reveal the possibilities of change and a more hopeful future. More information on the Festival of African Films can be found at kboo.fm/CFAF23.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 9 o'clock. Coming up next is the Old Mole Variety Show. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications, details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
I'm wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO 90.7, Portland, Oregon. KBOO is Portland's only community-owned and democratically operated radio station, and this is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Alan Weeder, and Kathleen Stevenson is sitting in for the moment for Joe Clement, our engineer. The Old Mole Variety Hour is committed to bringing you a socialist, feminist, progressive perspective on history, politics, economics, and culture. At a time in our history that Dick Gregory has so aptly called the yet-to-be United States of America. This morning, we will begin with Bill Resnick speaking to David Wyman on the political and economic forces that control America's justice system. Then bookmole Larry Bolden reviews Maria Semple's 2012 novel, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? I will follow with an interview of Portland activist singer-songwriter David Rovick and Tom Becker's well-read Red, The Trouble with Austerity, Cutting is More About Ideology Than Economics, will close out the hour. Before moving to Bill, let's listen to David Rovick's After the Revolution.
From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried.
Next, Bill Resnick speaks with Barnard Professor David Wyman, a member of Columbia University's Institute for Social and Economic Research and Policy. Bill?
The Liberty-